What's up, everyone? Welcome to Best Calisthenics. I'm your host, Kenneth Galarzo. In today's episode, we're going to dive into the true history and origin of the modern day calisthenics movement. Now, if you're into calisthenics, you've probably heard the same introduction repeatedly, that calisthenics stems from the Greek word kalisthenos and how the Spartans of ancient Greece practiced calisthenics. Now, what if I tell you they didn't practice calisthenics as we know it? They practiced what was called kalosthenos, the word that inspired calisthenics. Now, kalosthenos is translated as beautiful strength. In the days of the Spartans, kalosthenos was an umbrella term to reference individuals who reached high levels of strength, skill, ability in various sports, and could just perform at a high level of fitness. These people had incredible physiques, and you could look at them like our elite athletes of today. So boxing, wrestling, running would all display beautiful strength and were different sports in the ancient Greek Olympics. Notice the words used were beauty and strength, not calisthenics. Even Socrates is quoted as saying, "It is a shame for a man to grow old without seeing the beauty and strength of which his body is capable of." This is because both the terms calisthenics and the actual practice as we know it did not come into existence until about 1785, when ancient Greek culture heavily influenced the rest of the world, especially their views of philosophy, science, art, and their appreciation for physical fitness. In fact, the word gymnastics did not mean what it means today and simply meant someone who practiced at the gymnasium, which entailed different sports and other activities we're not going to dive into in this video. Most Greek athletes of the ancient day trained through a combination of practicing a chosen sport alongside with other modalities. They trained with weapons, heavy stones, sticks, ladders, sometimes wearing armor. There were different modalities and different systems, just like there are today. You find different coaches who have slightly different approaches, and these differ depending on the coach, the sport, the time, the period, the area. There was one such kingdom within the Greek Empire that was renowned for having incredible warriors who used harsh and extreme training methods. You probably know them as the Spartans. Spartan training most likely included several approaches, from training with armor, weapons, lifting heavy stones, wrestling, boxing, running, and other modalities. Probably like today, wearing a heavy weight vest. Imagine wearing all that armor and having to climb a ladder, right? This is why they were in such incredible shape. It was not only the Spartans of ancient Greece who held physical fitness in such high regard, but the kingdom as a whole, who held the Olympics every 4 years, the winners of which would become like modern day rock stars. Now, it was limited to men of nobility at the time, and although it was limited to men, women also had their own events, much, a little bit smaller than the Olympics, but in the same kind of format. Now, these Olympic Games had different sports such as boxing, wrestling, even some MMA stuff, vault and tumbling. These were the things probably most similar to gymnastics. These athletes most likely implemented some body weight training. However, the truth is most of their training revolved around the actual sport they were competing in. Runners ran, boxers practiced their boxing, and wrestlers wrestled. Simple body weight exercise at the time were also prescribed for health purposes. So Galen, one of the most famous ancient Greek physicians, used to prescribe exercises for the legs and trunk for overall health. What's that saying? Whatever goes up must come down. Sadly, around 393 AD, there was a significant decline in the promotion of physical fitness throughout Europe with the rise of the Roman Catholic Church as it believed fitness to be materialistic and unholy. So we went from this cultural period where people looked at these statues of what the perfect man looks like and sculpt him and be able to do all these, have all these physical attributes. But at the same time, as religious institutions grew, there was a little bit more focus towards your spiritual life. So transcending the material world, the physical world, things that maybe didn't matter as far as a religious perspective, that now have replaced the Roman Empire and was, putting out new values from that religious perspective. So schooling, education throughout medieval Europe, they came from religious institutions. This is where local kids would come to learn, would be their local church where they would taught them, basic math, reading skills, basic things that were going to help them in day-to-day life. Now, this hit to physical fitness unfortunately also marked the end of the Olympics that were held for over a millennia since 776 BC. While the Greek Olympics may have ended, festivals of sport and entertainment continued in various cultures throughout Europe. where they performed and displayed incredible feats of strength, balance, flexibilities, acrobatic skills, hand balancing movements. It almost would be like going to a Cirque du Soleil where you see this incredible hand-to-hand performers and people who drop in and out of backbends. So this has always been ingrained in human culture. At the time, knights and monks in medieval Europe were commonly engaging in physical fitness programs. So this is where the essence of physical training and a little bit more of the education side of programming and understanding, you know, the deeper aspects of fitness remained strong, where within these institutions were like monks and knights, right? Obviously the knights were training so they could be strong as far as like battle, versus monks were training as far as integrating physical fitness as a form of just overall health and tying it in with the education system, because again, they're the ones teaching the kids and responsible for education, not just religious education, but all education at the time. It was not until the Enlightenment period of the late 1700s, as I mentioned earlier, where the concept of physical education began to reemerge and spread like wildfire. Now, what are the two words at the center of this? Gymnastics and calisthenics. It was at this time that we see our modern version of calisthenics and gymnastics begin to take shape, beginning with its use for overall fitness and physical health. It was at this time that calisthenics became the term used to signify a different meaning, which we describe today. And at the time, it was described as light gymnastics, training with light or no weights, or even to the degree of exercising for females. Remember, these words were starting to be interpreted and used in different ways, but at the end of the day, it was meant to differentiate itself between calisthenics and gymnastics. It was not to be strenuous, but health-oriented, so focused on posture, balance, overall well-being. So movements included planks, side planks, reverse planks, exercises including marching drills, hopping drills, and probably things that we would consider to be stability and mobility movements today. It was at this time that training systems of gymnastics and calisthenics developed with various educators throughout Europe, including Germany, Sweden, and Denmark, who had a huge influence. Now, classical gymnastics included calisthenics in its system, with gymnastic utilizing training equipment such as pull-up bars, dip bars, ladders, rings, and other apparatuses, while calisthenics implied that they were training using no weights or very light weights, maybe some dumbbells, wands, or Indian clubs. Gymnastic workouts at the time looked very similar to what you would see in modern-day calisthenics training: handstands, push-ups, dips, squats, lunges, human flags, support. These were all movements that you saw in gymnastics in its origins. The late 1800s continued to see significant growth in physical fitness and education in Europe as well as the United States, especially in the form of gymnastics and calisthenics, which was heavily influenced by the Germanic system. As a result, the perspective of these two modalities began to transition from a practice to promote general health to competitive sport screaming to be mastered. Now remember, at this time, people are starting to be a little more physical, they're playing with these different movements. So it's almost like when people start to learn how to do calisthenics and they start messing with handstands, they start to develop themselves and continue to challenge themselves. Well, it gradually reached that stage where people are now competing against one another. Some of the earliest gymnastics competitions arose out of Germany in the 1890s at different festivals where people were just competing with one another who could do what, including a lot of bodyweight exercises that was considered gymnastics. Right? And by 1896, the first Olympic Games included the sport at the time. And in fact, by 1928, five of the six gymnastics events we presently see today were in the Olympics. As a product of its influence, calisthenics began to inherit the attributes of trainings with apparatuses and without apparatuses. So while at the beginning, calisthenics meant that you were not doing pull-ups because you weren't using pull-up bars, you were only using what you could hold in your hands, now it's starting to shift towards inheriting what gymnastics was doing, because now gymnastics is starting to differentiate itself as a sport as opposed to a training system for overall health and fitness. The Germanic system of teaching gymnastics and calisthenics was a dominant system used throughout schools in Europe and the United States up until about 1914, when World War I began. And this is because people began to have anti-German sentiments since they were the instigators of World War I in their viewpoint. And this would only be perpetuated later after World War II, when again, people would see Germans as the instigators of the war. So rather than let education just go out the window, it was kind of a mind shift where they went from that formal German education system of teaching physical fitness to now starting to do more physical activity. So they started to begin to see it as long as we're running, jumping, hopping, moving around and being physical, that we can start to use sports as a way of teaching physical fitness. So now we're shifting from physical education to physical activities. And so, you know, fitness began to grow as something that should be taught in different schools. So by 1930, over 36 states in the United States were mandating that schools have some kind of physical education program. But with another huge rise came another big fall with physical fitness. And luckily though, it didn't hit everyone. The Great Depression of 1929 would spark a difficult time in Europe and countries all over the world. So now you had a system that was no longer properly funded. You didn't have enough educators, enough equipment, and you had 1 in 4 Americans out of work at the peak of the Great Depression in 1933. So many individuals found themselves with ample time on their hands, and they were looking for things to do, things that didn't really require money. So it was at this time in the early 1930s where the original Muscle Beach was created in Santa Monica, California. So this was a place where people could come and train and play. They had pull-up bars, dip bars, rings, and even area for people to lift weights. So Muscle Beach was beginning to become this mecca of where people came to work out, to get strong. You would see some of the most amazing athletes at the time, like hand-to-hand handstands, right? But on top of somebody else, these were things that you would see in the circus today. And, you know, they'd probably put to shame the people that are there, not in a bad way, but that's how good they were. And you can find some of these old photos of these amazing athletes. So Muscle Beach continued to grow in its popularity throughout America, you know, where it became kind of this point where people wanted to visit and see Muscle Beach. It became this iconic place. It was a meeting place for innovative fitness individuals who were enthusiastic about physical fitness and just getting strong. So you would see stunts, flips, acrobatics, gymnastics, calisthenics, weightlifting. Just this became the mecca of fitness. It was a hub for people to come and learn and get fit. In the late 1950s, this fitness hub expanded further south to Venice Beach, which is also known as Muscle Beach to local goers. Thus, Santa Monica became known as the original Muscle Beach. This incredible beauty and strength displayed at Muscle Beach was unfortunately just an anomaly, as most of the country had declined in their own physical fitness. By the 1950s, studies were starting to come out that were showing that European children were much fitter compared to those of the United States. And this began to sound alarms for the American government. Obviously, you want a strong country, you want strong young people to join the military, and you just want to have a healthy society. So both President Eisenhower and President Kennedy began to push for physical education in schools, which were going to utilize more gymnastics and calisthenics. With the huge concern for the youth, fitness enthusiasts like Jack LaLanne began to gain popularity. He had his own TV show that ran, I think, for 10 plus years and opened up one of the first gyms in San Francisco. So he was promoting physical fitness, showing people how to do calisthenics, and at the same time, developed some of the first machines we've ever seen. The 1960s saw the emergence of bodybuilding. They just started to take off and grew, especially in the 70s and 80s. And in the 1980s is when commercial gyms began to really grow in popularity. Remember, this was the, you know, pumping iron era, Arnold Schwarzenegger. People were seeing these bigger than life individuals, and it was kind of inspiring for a lot of people who wanted to start lifting weights, want to have those muscles. So this was kind of where that fitness industry or modern fitness industry actually began to grow. So while calisthenics continued to be used, especially by gym goers that were mostly lifting weights, Arnold Schwarzenegger was still doing handstand pushups, dips, pull-ups. There were also other modalities, right? Like the military has always used calisthenics in gymnastics as part of their training. And so did people from other sports. Boxers have always done pushups. Wrestlers have always done sprawls and burpees and other different bodyweight exercises. So this was all part of that transition, but calisthenics became what was used in the background, and the foreground became weightlifting and bodybuilding. So the 1980s, the 1990s started to see the emergence of corporate gyms. Now fitness is starting to enter the consciousness of the masses. People are signing up to go to gyms. They're starting to grow. It's really starting to become an industry, right? And so while calisthenics hasn't stopped being used, weight training, using machines, using cables, these are the things that are at the foreground of training, especially at those commercial gyms. And so it really is not until about the 2000s with the emergence of social media, YouTube, Instagram, that boom, people are starting to see the beauty of body weight training. Now, it doesn't mean the Olympics weren't there. I feel like it was just so elite and it seemed so out of reach that it just didn't really have the appeal to the everyday person. But some people seeing a handstand, seeing a muscle up, things that were attainable, this started to people started to catch notice. Hey, I want to start to use calisthenics a little bit more. And remember, this was never that it was stopped being used. It just wasn't really utilized as the, you know, the main way of getting fit. So between 2008 and 2018, calisthenics began to really be embraced by more and more people, regular fitness people, people wanting to get fit, and thus grew different types of training it, different modalities, and even different sports that were emerging out of calisthenics. So it was at this time that I co-founded the World Calisthenics Organization, where we created Battle of the Bars, a freestyle training competition, as well as the street sport program at the time, which was one of the first calisthenics workshops out there. Now, let me just kind of put things into perspective for a second. You know, this was the very beginning of competitions really starting to grow, and you started to really see the emergence of calisthenics in Europe and the United States. And Battle of the Bars in the United States was the biggest competition, where you had the World Street Workout Federation in Russia. So these were like the big dominant, you know, organizations at the time. So 2019 came, COVID struck, and this really put a halt to competition all over the world in every kind of sport, right? Pretty much the world was stopped. There was people who were quarantined. And while the aspect of calisthenics and gymnastics kind of had a pause, body weight training or calisthenics as a whole really began to grow, because now people are looking for ways of getting fit at home. Hey, you know what? I don't need a gym. I can go to the park. Hey, you know what? I can get a home pull-up bar. Hey, I'm starting to understand that I can just do exercises from my house. So today you'll find a variety of different programs for home, gym, at the park, right? Everywhere, because there was an explosion of calisthenics and bodyweight exercises being utilized. Today, you'll find competitions all over the world. So while you won't find any, you'll still find big competitions. It's almost grown so much that smaller and smaller groups start to grow and take more of that. I don't want to say market share, right? But just now you have more organizations in Mexico, the United States, Canada, Germany, England, all starting their own federations, as opposed to when it was just two of the bigger ones going on. As the practice of calisthenics has spread all over the world and the usage of it continues to increase and is increased by millions, there's a lot more information and knowledge that has been shared. Unfortunately, a lot of it comes from firsthand perspective. You'll see videos like, this is what I wish I would have learned when I first started calisthenics 1 year ago, or starting to give information about how to scale a movement, going from your knees or to a normal position, a push-up position, and then elevating your feet. Right? The problem is, a lot of these times they're just overly simplified. Over the past decade, I found that the calisthenics movement hasn't quite become the movement I thought it would be, as a lot of the audience remains young males who are very lean and really focused on the advanced movements. And it's so unfortunate, because when I first started teaching about this movement, the beauty that I found in it was that anybody can enhance the abilities of their body through bodyweight exercises, and it's such an accessible means of training without necessarily having a gym membership. And that's with me saying that I work at a gym and I train people at a gym who pay to be there. So what you're gonna see is a lot of fluff that's out there, a lot of oversimplifications of how to scale a movement. What you're not gonna see is who should be doing the movement, when they should be doing the movement, what movements should they be coupled with? What should you be stabilizing before entering a conditioning phase or a strength phase? Now, there's so many different people at different levels or at different places. It's hard to have a program that has that huge perspective. The problem is, none of this information has ever been compiled into a certification program for trainers, at least a true one and a comprehensive one, that understands that there are literally hundreds of levels. There's a difference between somebody that could do one push-up, 5 push-ups, and 20 push-ups. What one push-up means to each of them is gonna be different. But my hope is that with my flagship system, Best Method, is to further the knowledge and understanding of how to properly use calisthenics for all demographics and populations, and to better develop the calisthenics movement. Because the truth is, calisthenics can be used by almost everyone to enhance their fitness journey. Best Method isn't just another set of calisthenics exercises. It's a structured program, a design philosophy rooted in biomechanics, progressive overload, and fitness principles, such as knowing when to stabilize a joint for a certain movement, how to condition it, at what phase you should start strength training, what you should prioritize, what you should be first, second, how often you should train it. These are all the details that really make up the program design. Okay, so BEST is pretty much an acronym. It stands for Body Weight Equilibrium Strength Training. So it's a holistic program. It revolves around the concepts of building overall fitness, primarily through the use of body weight exercise and your own relative strength, right? So you have absolute strength and you have relative strength, and there's a correlation between them. Now imagine a system that streamlines program designs, allowing you to craft highly effective workouts with a deep understanding of how the exercises impact the body, knowing what movements are gonna be enhancing them by combining the right movements at the right time. This not only saves you time, but also ensures your clients are challenged appropriately, leading to faster progress and a heightened motivation. So again, there's a big difference between two different individuals who can't do a pull-up. One person might be a month away, while somebody else might be several months away, or maybe a year away, right? And it's important to know even the steps along the way and to recognize when somebody is ready or even how close they are by knowing the correlations between different movements. Think about a client struggling with their push-ups or their pull-ups, somebody who's just been stuck for a long period of time or can't get past 2. Best Method provides a clear progression path focusing on proper form, technique before introducing different variations. This not only builds their confidence, it reduces the risk of injury, but also keeps your clients engaged and excited to conquer the next challenge. So understanding that everybody at every level is gonna have appropriate movements and appropriate challenges. The goals of different people also matter. Someone who really wants to do a push-up versus someone get their first muscle up, there's gonna be a huge difference in what they should be doing, how they should be doing it, how frequent they should even be training. So there's a lot of variables that go into this. The best part, the scalability interweaved through the BEST protocols allows you to cater to a wider range of clients. It offers modifications for beginners, ensuring safe and effective workouts regardless of fitness levels, while at the same time, it provides progressions that challenge even the most advanced seasoned athletes. The versatility positions you as a trainer to cater to a diverse needs, expanding your client base and solidifying your reputation as a well-rounded trainer. So thanks for watching. Don't forget to subscribe to the BEST channel. Plus, if you want to be a BEST insider, head to my website and join the newsletter, and I'll see you next time.